The headlines, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, warns of enemies' attempts to weaken Muslim unity and spirituality. Anti-government protests rock Sri Lanka. The president flees just in time to avoid an angry mob. Also coming up, Tunisia's president unveils an amended version of the highly criticized constitution ahead of a referendum later this month. Welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has issued a message on the annual event of the Hajj pilgrimage calling for unity among Muslims. The leader said enemies have long strived to sow divisions and undermine spirituality among Muslims. Ayatollah Khamenei, however, said the Islamic world is today ready to foil such plots. He said this is due to resistance and the fact that Muslims are more aware of the grand value of their religion. Ayatollah Khamenei said there is a large number of young people in Islamic countries who are energetic and highly motivated. He termed those youth, quote, valuable assets in shaping the future of the Muslim world. Also in his message, the leader said the Islamic Republic is a good example of how Islamic sovereignty, together with people's vote, can form a principle of governance in the country. The leader hailed what he called the stability, independence, and progress and honor of the Islamic Republic as a meaningful phenomenon that can attract to the thoughts of every conscious Muslim. Political commentator Sayyid Mohsen Abbas joined us earlier to give us his thoughts. He said, Hajj is a symbol of equality and stands against oppression.
The problems that Muslims face and the problems, by extension, the West faces, and what's going on in West Asia at the moment in terms of the oppression of Yemen, the oppression of the likes of the Palestinians, the oppression of Afghanistan, you know, all across that region, it's littered with the oppression of Zionists and the imperialists. For the Saudis to reject that obviously is a political move, because they're hand in glove with that very oppression. They're the ones fighting in Yemen. They're the ones funding a lot of the terrorism around that region. They're the ones who give the Americans and the Zionists a foothold in the region. And they're the ones who spread religious ideologies which sectarianize and divide. Well, the Hajj goes against the vein of all of that. And, you know, the enemies, of course, who try to weaken Islam's spirituality, who are weakening even Westerners themselves in terms of their morality and spirituality, they have this neoliberal material ideology, which again, the Hajj rejects. You can see the two pieces of cloth which Muslims wear at the Hajj, the simplicity of it, the beauty of it, and the circumambulation and the Kaaba all represent this kind of lack of materialism and this kind of alternative worldview. And I think that's what scares, certainly, the Zionist Western Empire, which is the primary problem creator across the globe today. And that's what actually empowers the resistance axis.
Muslims performing Hajj rituals in the Saudi city of Mecca celebrate Eid al-Adha, the feast of sacrifice that marks the culmination of the annual pilgrimage. Pilgrims are now performing the stoning of the devil, a ceremony symbolizing complete obedience to God. They do so at the tent of the city of Mina, close to Mecca. After staying the night there, the pilgrims went then to slaughter the sacrificial animal. After that, they will go to the Grand Mosque of Mecca to perform a final tour of a circling around Kaaba. This year's Hajj pilgrimage is the biggest since the COVID pandemic began. Some 1 million Muslims, including 850,000 from outside Saudi Arabia, are taking part. Hajj is one of the largest annual religious gatherings in the world. The Tunisian President Kais Saied has amended a draft constitution after the original version drew criticism over the powers it gave to the head of state. The amended draft marks changes to two articles, including the one about rights and freedoms. Those articles have been criticized for paving the way for a dictatorial regime. President Saied published the amended version late Friday, saying that he aimed to avoid confusion. Still, the new version is believed to retain a broad range of powers for the head of state. The new constitution will be put to a referendum this month and is the main part of Saied's plans to remark Tunisia's politics. Last year, he sacked the government and dissolved parliament, a move seen by his critics as a coup against democracy. People in Japan mourn the death of former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe a day after he was shot dead in the western city of Nara. Mourners visited the scene of Abe's assassination, putting flowers there to show respect for him. Earlier today, a hearse carrying Abe's body arrived at his residence in the capital, Tokyo. Abe was the longest-serving Prime Minister of Japan. He was shot during an election campaign rally ahead of the Sunday upper house vote and died later in the hospital. The suspect is in custody and has confessed to assassinating Abe. His motivation? Well, a belief that Abe was linked to an unspecified group. The killing sent shockwaves across Japan and the world. Iran has called the terror attack and a terror attack and has strongly condemned. And anger is boiling up in Sri Lanka over the worst economic crisis in decades. Earlier today, thousands of protesters stormed the president's official residence in the capital, Colombo. Hundreds packed into rooms and corridors, shouting slogans against the president. He was reportedly removed from the office premises on Friday. The protesters, people actually have traveled to Colombo when other parts of Sri Lanka to join the protests in the city. People want the president to step down, blaming his government for the economic hardships that they're facing. Sri Lanka has been crippled by a shortage of foreign exchange that has left struggling to pay fuel, food, and medicine. The island nation has sought an International Monetary Fund bailout to secure funds for essential commodities. For more on that, let's talk to Jihan Pereira, the Executive Director of the National Peace Council of Sri Lanka. Thank you very much for joining us. The situation is quite tense, so what do you predict will now happen with the president's whereabouts unknown? The people's concerns are mainly economic, but given the country's current status, how likely is it that a change of government would improve the situation?
I think actually the mood is quite jubilant at this time, that as you would have seen footage of people going into the president's house and occupying it. They are taking a swim. They are touring it. Hopefully they will not vandalize it. I'm very hopeful that that will not happen. But they have been able to breach that. And what this means is that it shows that the government is unable to resist the people's protest. And what is wonderful about this is that it has been very peaceful. People have protested peacefully by and large. There have been some exceptions where they went and where people went and burnt government MPs' homes, but that was just on one occasion. The rest of the time it has been very peaceful. And today, I mean, I was there myself, participating in the protest, in the demonstration. I saw young children, people bringing their children, because this is not political. This is really all the people wanting a change of government, a government that will solve the problems that they are facing. And because they feel that this government, which came to power 3 years ago on a big mandate of the people, has failed them, has mismanaged the economy, has stolen money, and therefore they should go. And I'm hopeful that, now there is no constitutional way to force the president out. There's a very long process of impeachment. But also the people want the parliament also. They want the government in its entirety to go. The president plus the government, which is dominated by the president's party, they want them to go. And I have a feeling that that is going to happen now. And what we are moving towards is an all-party government, a small all-party government. Maybe it excludes the present the ruling family and the ministers of this present government, but it's going to be a small all-party government for a temporary period to try and get over the hump and then be able to negotiate with the IMF and foreign countries, which have been very reluctant to give us money. And we think the reason they don't want to give us the money is that there's a feeling that this present leadership is very corrupt, very inefficient, fighting among themselves, and therefore you can't trust them with the money that you will give them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jehan Pereira, the Executive Director of the National Peace Council of Sri Lanka. Hello and welcome to another edition of the News Review. The race to replace outgoing Prime Minister Boris Johnson is heating up. Johnson was forced to resign in the wake of back-to-back ministerial resignations rocking his government. So far, several high-profile figures have thrown their hat into the ring in the race for Tory leadership. The UK's political earthquake is happening amid a deepening cost of living crisis, as well as a domino of strikes across different sectors during the summer. Johnson suffered a series of blows during his term, including the so-called Partygate scandal. Now we're joined by Robert Carter, our correspondent in London, and Lee Jasper, political activist, also from London. Let's begin with our correspondent. Robert, if you could please tell us a bit about the race for the Tory leadership, the infighting in the party, and how it's going to affect Britain's political landscape.
Sure. Well, basically, we're in a unique situation here because essentially the future leader of the country is not going to be elected by British people. He's being chosen by essentially due-paying members of the Conservative Party. So in terms of, you know, the criticism that surrounds the Conservatives of being a party of the elite, where a few select individuals basically get to lord it over the rest of us, nothing suggests that more so than the current situation to pick the next prime minister. But interestingly enough, Boris Johnson has basically been described in media as a prime minister who's resigned his position. But technically, he's only resigned as leader of the Conservative Party. He's still ongoing as prime minister while this process is underway. And that could go on for, I think, somewhere between 6 weeks, perhaps even longer than that. He could be prime minister until perhaps later in the autumn. So basically, we have a situation again where a prime minister who everyone initially wanted to get rid of there and then is still clinging on to power and is still the prime minister during this turbulent period that the country's going through. And in the meantime, we still have like the cost of living crisis, people just can't afford their daily expenses, and the country is going through a very rough and turbulent period economically. And this leadership battle may make it even harder for the country to navigate through it without effective leadership. So that's obviously on everyone's mind. The opposition again is trying to score brownie points as much as it can by undermining and attacking the government on this. But essentially we have a situation where Britain is going through one of its worst economic crises for many years. And basically the ruling Tory party will have to spend weeks now battling it out to figure out who the next leader is going to be. The people that have come forward so far include names such as Rishi Sunak, but many other names are expected to join the race as well. There's about four candidates so far. Rishi Sunak seems to be very eager to make his pitch for prime minister. But as is often the case with these types of leadership battles, usually we expect that actually comes out on top in the end. See how it goes.
Jasper, it is a pretty difficult situation for whoever prime minister for the cost of living crisis from the summer of strikes. What is going to be the primary challenges facing the next leader?
Cost of living crisis. It's the one that is likely to be the number one item in this new prime minister's intray. It's curious, isn't it, that we're subject, the whole country's held to ransom because of an arcane Tory policy that means that it's incredibly difficult to shift a sitting prime minister, regardless of the circumstances. And surely for a modern constitution like Britain, there should be some facility to be able to remove a sitting prime minister when they act in such an egregious, offensive and duplicitous manner. But certainly the cost of living crisis, the energy crisis, you know, the challenges in relation to Brexit continue to loom large. And of course, coming from a black perspective, we've seen 163% increase in racist attacks since Brexit referendum. And these are getting increasingly more vicious. It's part of the history, isn't it, of European nations that whenever their economies decline, racism and organized fascism increases. So that's what we're seeing currently. But certainly the cost of living crisis will be their number one priority.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee Jasper, political activist from London, and Robert Carter, our correspondent. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review. And thanks to you for following this edition.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Have you heard of the Bilderberg Group? Probably not. Well, that's understandable because members of the group work really hard to remain anonymous. The Bilderberg Group consists of between 120 to 150 powerful people who meet for 3 days once a year to discuss foreign policy. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. Now, since 1954, the Bilderberg Group has been gathering in secret to discuss everything from the rise and fall of communism to nuclear warfare to cybersecurity. The group began as a way to create more cooperation between Europe and North America during the Cold War. Bilderberg releases an annual list of people who will attend and topics they will discuss, but beyond that, little leaves the walls of the meeting rooms. We disclose the truth behind the group's agenda.
We are endowed by our Creator with rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which nobody, no person, no group, no political party, not even our government, can take away from us.
Hitler had a dream that his big business should dominate the world. He called his dream the New Order.
We've already amended the Constitution dozens of times. Let's throw it away for a master plan run by a master state.
Morgan is the largest group. Then there is the strong Kuhn Loeb group, the Mellon interests, which have Westinghouse, DuPont with General Motors, and then there is Rockefeller, and three other groups, making up a grand total of some $82 billion assets in 1945. Eight groups control the American economy, not only because of their concentration of wealth, but through their strategic ownership of basic industries. In spite of war, these companies operate internationally through subsidiaries, stock participation, and cartel agreements with various other companies.
Have you ever heard of the Bilderberg Group?
No.
Yeah. No, never.
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't heard of that.
I don't know too much about that Bilderberg thing.
Have you guys ever heard about a group called the Bilderberg Group?
No.
Yeah, for the most part.
I have not.
Sounds kind of familiar, but I couldn't tell you what it was.
No, never heard of them.
Have you ever heard of a group called the Bilderberg Group? No, I haven't.
The Bilderberg?
Well, what would you say if I told you it's a group of about 120 people on average who meet once a year? These are politicians, heads of media, military men, heads of finance. They meet once a year in secret, behind closed doors, discussing foreign policy. What would you think?
What would I think?
Yeah. Do you think that's a good thing, a bad thing? Do you agree with it, disagree? Is there anything wrong with some of the most powerful and influential people in the world meeting behind closed doors and discussing things in secret?
It's a smart thing to get as many brains in a room as you can to discuss things. And if you're going to have open and honest dialogue, sometimes that information should be kept within the room. If they're going to make good and careful decisions on political initiatives, they need to be able to meet with the brightest minds in the country, and I don't think necessarily that we need to be inside that meeting.
I just tend not to recognize their power and just to, like, pretend they don't exist, because for all intents and purposes, they don't in my world. Like, no matter how much harm they do or how much good they think they do, I really couldn't care less.
In the spring of 1954, Joseph Redinger, Polish political advisor and founder of the European movement that would lead to the founding of the European Union, started the Bilderberg Group, an informal and off-the-record conference for political and business elites from European and Western nations. With the help of Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, along with other powerful politicians and businessmen, they organized the first annual Bilderberg meeting at the Hotel de Bilderberg in Oosterbeek, Netherlands. The Prince, a former executive for IG Farben and a former Nazi SS party member before the war, was also an influential executive in the oil industry, working for Royal Dutch Petroleum. As a member of the Dutch royal family and the father of the current matriarch and fellow Bilderberger Queen Beatrix, Bernhard was a very powerful and influential member of the European community. The original stated goals of the Bilderberg Group were to bring together the leaders of business, finance, and politicians from Europe and Western nations in a forum that would allow for candid and frank discussions of international issues without the fear of being quoted or recorded. Thus, the meetings are held in secret and are by invitation only. For almost 60 years, the Bilderberg Group has been meeting behind closed doors in luxury hotels around the world to discuss in secret their plan for global control of world events and markets. Over the years, their members have included heads of state, politicians, business executives, media moguls, global financiers, military leaders, intelligence agencies, and many other powerful organizations and individuals whose reach extends to every corner of the world. Some notable members have included the Rothschild banking family, Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, Prince Philip and Prince Charles of the British royal family, international financier David Rockefeller, and former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. The members of the Bilderberg Group have such an influence over the media that until recent years, their name and existence has been quietly kept from the general public through a veritable media blackout. With the advent of new social media tools and advances in technology, the independent media has been exposing these annual meetings on an increasing scale. We have reached the turning point. The Bilderberg Group is now finding it almost impossible to stay out of the spotlight and hide their powerful cabal from the public.
The fact that in the 21st century, we still have monarchies who have influence and wealth, then how come bills can't get signed without the Queen of England's approval? How come the Canadian Parliament can be suspended by the Queen of England if she wishes? If she has no power, why does the final decision-making process rest with her?
We could talk about the 99%, but it's really the 99.99999%, because the people that are in here, they're not one out of 100, they're not one out of 1,000, they're not one out of 10,000, 100,000, they're more like one out of a million or 10 million, or beyond that. Okay?
The billionaire club.
That's right. It's the billionaire and trillionaire club, and you and I, we're not in it, we're not ever going to be in it, so we got to hold their feet to the fire. We've got to expose what's going on here. We've got to find out who the 2012 attendees are, and we've got to keep our eyes on the headlines in the next coming weeks, months, and even years to see what these associations have done geopolitically, because they'll be in the headlines. When you have someone like Davignon claiming, and not really claiming because he's on the inside, he would know better than you and I, that the Bilderberg Group was instrumental in creating the European Union and the Euro. I would say that's a pretty big deal. And whether that's evil or not, that's a geopolitical move, and that decision was made by this group.
What you need to do is look up who are the companies they work for, who else have they worked for, what are their agendas, what are they in the news doing. That will tell you so much about the reach of Bilderberg, about why they invite these people, and about how they put the world together. In the case of Europe, you heard that, quote, Goldman Sachs rules the world, where you've got Peter Sutherland, head of Goldman Sachs International Board of Directors out of Ireland. He's telling them to accept the austerity and the other financial plans.
Throughout history, we've had people with power attempting to consolidate their power and hold on to it. So that's really the agenda here. The agenda is to stay as powerful as possible for as long as possible and crush any competition.
In recent years, the lack of coverage from the mainstream media on the Bilderberg Group has been a problem as far as raising awareness about these conferences. However, 2012 is a major turning point for the Bilderberg Group, as the independent media have been here providing the coverage that's been lacking from the mainstream.
Where's Fox News been for the last 15 years? CNN for the last 20 years? Why does Sean Hannity ridicule anybody that calls in and asks about the significance of the Bilderberg Group? Obviously, they're on the payroll. When people say that, quote, they control the media, they're talking about the secret establishment.
I'm just here to cover the Bilderberg conference and try to do what the mainstream media is lacking. It's not fair to say that there's no coverage of Bilderberg, because even some of the Bilderberg-owned outlets in the mainstream media have covered it, but it's been so far and few between that I think it's important for us as people, as citizens and as journalists, as professionals, to come down here ourselves and investigate it.
I'm definitely down here just to protest the real 1% that's meeting here at the Westfields Marriott behind closed doors. We're not seeing any major media out here.
Where's CNN? Where's the mainstream media? Where's Fox, MSNBC, any of these stations? They are not here.
The mainstream media is owned by these people. There's only a handful of what you call mainstream media covering this because this isn't supposed to exist. Our media, until just about 5 years ago, said that Bilderberg did not even exist.
It's been definitely incredible seeing so many people come all over the world just to participate in bringing awareness to the Bilderberg Group. It's by far the largest Bilderberg protest that I have ever seen. A lot of alternative media, a lot of attention being brought to the Bilderbergers. The mainstream media is failing, but the alternative people's media is becoming the mainstream media, and we're proving that by covering Bilderberg.
We want to make sure that we can get documentation of the attendees just to have confirmation of who is in attendance. Once you know, you can absolutely confirm who's in attendance. You can have a better feel for what are some of the things that are going to be discussed.
The Bilderberg Group was founded by Nazis after World War II with their European cohorts in the United States to try to bring in a one-world government. These people are terrorists, 110%. The government has been usurped and completely hijacked. The United States flag is not hanging upside down in distress. The flag was taken a long time ago. Yeah!
The Washington Post was here this morning. They've known about it since the very beginning because their founders, Katherine Graham, and now her son, Donald Graham, come every single year without fail.
They're not talking about it. We have to. We will. And people are paying attention to that. And they're starting to trust us. And every day we're getting bigger and bigger.
The media moguls here that do participate at the Bilderberg meeting are failing. They're not successful at all in any way, shape, or form. Their businesses, their whole enterprises are failing. And what you see is people rising up.
In the face! In the face! In the face! In the face!
There has to be at least 500 people here now, and the veteran who was arrested yesterday was just arrested again. There's large people gathering in front of where the Bilderberg members inside the building can actually hear the people outside, and that's where a group of police officers grabbed this guy, same guy from yesterday, and it appears that they are making an example and trying to keep everybody away from the area where the people inside can definitely hear everything that is going on.
We're bullhorning the Bilderberg. They send cops down to stand behind us. We turn, and they just arrest somebody for no reason to get us to chase them down the street. They grab him, take him away like prey, and we run out and follow after.
The whole world is watching! The whole world is watching! The whole world is watching!
This group is meeting with government officials. It violates federal law, the Logan Act. And for decades, they said it didn't even exist. This is the real oligarchs that run our government, run Europe, run most of the world to the big central banks and the fraud that they engage in. These are the real tyrants. So we're identifying them, not the puppet presidents and prime ministers. We're going directly to the financial oligarch, the robber barons.
In 2008, it was revealed that the Canadian government, under the leadership of Bilderberg member Stephen Harper, would be buying $25 billion worth of mortgage pools through the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. Shortly after the election in October of 2008, the re-elected Harper Conservatives unilaterally announced the government will purchase up to an additional $50 billion of insured mortgage pools by the end of the fiscal year, as a part of its ongoing efforts to maintain the availability of longer-term credit in Canada. This action will increase to $75 billion, the maximum value of securities purchased through Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. There was no debate in the Canadian Parliament over whether to hand out $75 billion in taxpayer money to the private chartered banks, nor was it covered by the Bilderberg-controlled mainstream media. The control of the Bilderberg Group extends not only to the media and the control of information, but also to the Canadian banking system itself and our ability to control our own currency. In 1938, Prime Minister William Lyon Mackenzie King nationalized the Bank of Canada, giving control of the Canadian currency to the people of Canada. Although the issuance of currency is held solely by the Bank of Canada, the creation of credit through the issuance of loans is still largely controlled by private chartered banks. As part of the Bank of Canada's charter, the government can borrow up to 50% of its own money from the Bank of Canada at 0% interest. The other half of the interest is paid back into the government, allowing for the financing of our own infrastructure, such as the St. Lawrence Seaway and the Trans-Canada Highway. Because of Bilderberg member Paul Martin, Canada now borrows its money from the private chartered banks at the going interest rate, effectively handing over the usury and interest to private corporations. Prior to Prime Minister Brian Mulroney, all banks had to hold an 8% reserve, meaning they could lend out the same money 12.5 times through credit and loans. Mulroney dropped this to a 0% reserve, allowing private banks to loan as much money as they want, simply by entering a new line on a ledger. Currently, the Bank of Canada is only responsible for 5% of the actual debt created in the form of currency. The private chartered banks, such as Royal Bank of Canada and TD Bank, own the remaining 95% of all debt. Think of how much control this amounts to when you consider all of the digital payment and loan options used today, such as credit cards, debit cards, internet payments, RFID chips, smartphone purchases, and even biometric identification, which is now used in India for bank withdrawals. Very few people use real currency, and the trend is turning to an increasing reliance on digital and computer technologies, of which are largely controlled by members of the Bilderberg Group. Members of the Bilderberg Group who are involved in the Canadian banking system include President and CEO of Royal Bank of Canada, Gordon Nixon; President and CEO of TD Bank Financial Group, Edmund Clark; Deputy Chair of TD Bank Financial Group and former Canadian Ambassador to the United States, Frank McKenna; former Minister of Finance and Director of Manulife Financial, Michael Wilson; Managing Director of Credit Suisse Securities, Ronald S. Lloyd; former CEO of Scotiabank, Peter C. Godsoe; former Governor of the Bank of Canada, David A. Dodge; and Governor of the Bank of Canada and former Goldman Sachs executive, Mark Carney.
501c3 tax-exempt foundations have to make certain forms publicly available. And so somebody tipped me off about this, that the 990 forms are available for the Bilderberg Group. And I got the years 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010. Well, first of all, they're operating under the 501c3 tax-exempt name American Friends of Bilderberg. The 2008 forms also show a list of very interesting donors. Henry Kissinger, $20,000. David Rockefeller, $50,000. Freeport McMoRan Foundation, $10,000. Microsoft, $75,000. Peter Thiel from PayPal, $75,000. Goldman Sachs, $25,000. The Washington Post, $25,000. So, of course, the Washington Post is going to be reluctant to report on them when they are literally funding them, and I have the proof in my hand.
Other large donors of the Bilderberg Group include $25,000 from Lazard, a large investment bank which is based in New York's Rockefeller Center. Lazard is one of the key players in the Bilderberg finances, attending dozens of meetings over the years. Another large donor and regular attendee to Bilderberg is co-founder of Kohlberg Kravis Roberts & Company, Henry Kravis. KKR is a private equity firm with over $62 billion in assets as of 2011. Kravitz donated $50,000 in 2008 to the Bilderberg Group. Billionaire financier David Rockefeller of Manhattan Bank has been a steady donor to the Bilderberg meetings and has been a cornerstone of the group's development, attending nearly every conference since its inception in 1954. Rockefeller is an honorary lifetime chairman of the Bilderberg Group and has been involved in the development of many other powerful globalist think tanks, such as the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations. In 1965, David Rockefeller gave a speech to the International Industrial Conference in San Francisco, where he said, "We have entered upon an era in which interdisciplinary cooperation on a worldwide basis must be the cornerstone of accomplishment. Each of us has the duty to fashion his own contribution to fit the grand design of a global community. For many of us, the marketplace of tomorrow will be no less than this whole planet of Earth. What we do will manifest itself in ways that we cannot foretell, and it will have an unforeseen impact upon individual lives and whole societies. What we are is God's gift to man. What we become is man's gift to God."
The Rockefeller-Rothschild merger that just occurred yesterday obviously had some things in the works before then. But for those that don't know, the Rothschilds have bought up 37% of the main financial institute of the Rockefellers. They're going to be talking about swallowing up smaller financial institutions, like they say in the article. Essentially, they see opportunity in crisis. And we've known some smaller banks, a lot of smaller banks, have gone down in the last 2 or 3 years. Well, now they're consolidating power. They're going to buy up those smaller banks, and don't be surprised if you see them bail out or take a large stake in some of the bigger banks that have been having problems, such as maybe even Bank of America and JP Morgan.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Greetings dear brothers and sisters and welcome to IRB English Radio Station You guys are listening for a better life With you today is your brother Habib Today we're going to be talking about a concept that really just changes the way that how you think about life how you work with life and how you just go throughout your everyday life, the mentality that you have, actually. And it really just affects your actions. And that is having yaqeen in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, or certainty in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This yaqeen, this certainty, is that you believe that there's a day of judgment, there's a day of resurrection, there will be a day where you will be asked, why did you do this? Why didn't you do that? There's this day that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will get your rights back, will give you your rights back that you lost in this world. There's this belief that there's a creator who's all-powerful, the availability of this creator. There's a difference between a person who believes in a creator, in a power, and a person who does not believe in this power. The person who does not believe in it is just like is living his life like any other animal, eating, drinking, any means of survival. The person who has this belief, their goal and purpose of life is 180 degrees different. This person is going to be thinking about his afterlife. His goal is his afterlife. He is running towards his afterlife. He is not thinking about this world. This world will vanish. The person who has certainty is Zahid, or the person who does not care about this world and is not intact about this world. Whether he has the kingdoms, I'm not telling you to go sit in a mountain and just worship. I'm saying is that if you have a kingdom and you have servants underneath your hands, your situation, your mentality, you yourself are the same person or is the same person that if you are homeless, a person with no money, you are one. You remain with this, you know, there's no self-pride, there's no boasting, there's no ego. You do not change. You're one. You're not connected to this world. You're not a slave to this world. Rather, the world is a slave for you. Or you're a slave for Allah, towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So, for example, if this person with certainty wants to enter a business and, you know, start to have an income, their belief in income differs from a person who does not have this belief. This person with a belief in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the certainty in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, has it in his mind that there's this concept of ghina, self-wealth. See, when we say ghina, the meaning of ghina in the Arabic language means wealth. But usually when we say in the sayings of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, the special language you could call it, or a special term, it means that the self-sufficient. You are qunu', you are okay with what you have. You're happy with what you have. And that's going back to also the certainty and trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So when you enter, you have this, you know, self-sufficiency. So you're not going to care if your wealth is low or high. Of course, when it's high, it helps out. When it's low, it's kind of, you know, it hurts sometimes, yes. But it's not going to change you. You're going to stay the same. Another thing is that when he enters the business, that he's going to be trustworthy. Why? Because he fears Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. A person who has certainty in Allah, he has certainty in his punishments, is going to be a trustworthy person when you deal with. When he enters his businesses, he's not going to steal. He's not going to lie. He's not going to cheat. Another factor is that if he loses it, it's not the end of the world for him. If he gains, it's not the end of the world for him. He will be giving the rights of the poor. Because, you know, one of the when a person becomes ghani or wealthy, rights become upon his shoulders. And some of the rights include khumus, include zakat, include giving sadaqat, including helping the brothers in various situations. So he's going to be giving. Why? Because he's a person that believes in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He has certainty in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He has certainty in his rewards. He has certainty in his punishments. This certainty helps this person throughout life. Now, brothers and sisters, we'll be taking a short break. Please stay tuned and we'll see you after the break.
We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We ourselves, we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
When you look at life, when you look at dunya, its reality is that it doesn't stay, it goes away, it changes. One day you're the king of the world, the other day you are a peasant. It's normal. This is the dunya. The dunya doesn't lie to us. The dunya is telling us that I am like this. We just have to look and understand it. A person with this mentality, with al-yaqeen, when he enters a business, he knows that one day it might go away, so use it in good right now. One day it might increase, there might be more tests, so he does not change. He remains himself or herself. And that's yaqeen in business. And of course, when you enter business in any field, the respect, the name that you gain is more important in some situations than the wealth that you have. And a person with yaqeen is usually supposed to be a respectful person, actually. Why? Because he's staying away from lying, he's staying away from stealing, he's staying away from cheating. And therefore, that really just causes community to like this person, to commit with this person, to continue working with this person. It helps out when you're a respected person, when you enter your field, you want to open up, for example, an agreement, or you want to sign a contract, or you want to, you know, go with this company, you want to sign up with this company, for example, normal jobs nowadays, or you want to sell this, you want to sell that. When you sell something, you sell it truly, you sell it as it is, you do not cheat, you do not lie. When you're signing up with the company, you're working hard, you're not going to add times to your timesheet or whatever. This really, really is returning to that fear in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And that fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala comes from the certainty of the availability of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and that He is all witnessing, all seeing, all knowing, and He will reward and punish. And it really just causes the human being to walk on the straight path when doing business. Not only that, but also the way that you treat, you know, harsh times during businesses. You know, sometimes you need dua, you need supplication, you need to ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And usually a person who has certainty in Allah will ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, will connect to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, will know that the main thing is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is available, and He will not leave you, and He will give you your rizq, your wealth will come to you. You ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to increase your wealth, increase your rizq. Another thing is that when things become expensive or things become low, you know, you do not break, you do not go fall into depression, you do not fall into that stress factor, you return home normal. You know, there are some people who, for example, when they have a bad day at the job or bad day at the office or do not sell, they return home very angry. And that's really just something that hurts the families and or the base of family. We have this saying that states that if you become in need, the Prophet ﷺ states that go away from your house, exit your house, go search for your rizq. Why? Do not stay at home and hurt your family. So these are concepts, all these teachings. In summary, the teachings that you gain from Islam and you believe in, because you have certainty in them, they will change your life for the better. And of course, for the better, we always save this, for this world and for the hereafter together, both of them. And patience comes from certainty in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Why? Because when you know, it really helps you when you know that there will be a reward, you remain patient, you will work harder, you will struggle more for your family, for example, for your sake of business. You will know why you're working in your business anyway. Why are you trading and selling? Just for the sake of gaining wealth, or for gaining wealth to do this, to do that, to live, to not need this person, to aid yourself in worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and reaching your goal in the hereafter and whatnot. So in summary, in one word, certainty in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala aids you in various situations throughout life. It changes the way your mindset towards your life. And we talked about business today. Inshallah ta'ala, another episode we'll talk about something else. From now until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash.
I share, he knows. Allah knows.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.